Good morning. If you're a visitor, I'd like to welcome you to our services this morning. I'd also like to assure you that I'm not the regular preacher, so whatever you hear, you don't have to probably hear it from me again. There's a better guy, a professional that does this most of the time. I'd like to thank the elders for the opportunity to speak to you. I always wonder if it's the last time I'm going to get to speak to you, but hopefully not. Hopefully it goes well. So I want to start out with a little story. Kind of preacher story, the little stories that preachers tell to introduce you to a topic or subject. And this one's about Harold the fisherman. And everyone always wondered how Harold the fisherman, who never seemed to be able to catch fish, all of a sudden started coming in off the lake with a net and a stringer full of fish. Finally, the game warden decided, you know what, I need to go out with Harold to figure out what's going on here. So got in the boat, and here comes Harold, tackle box, dipping net, no fishing poles, and off they go. And the warden's thinking, how is this even possible? He doesn't even have fishing poles. So they go out, set up anchor, and as the warden is sitting here figuring in his mind how this is going to work, Harold opens his tackle box, takes out a stick of dynamite, lights it, and throws it in the water. All of a sudden, these dead and stunned fish begin to float to the surface. Well, of course, the warden is aghast, and he says, Harold, You can't do this. I mean, number one, this is illegal. Number two, this is dangerous. And as he's continuing to expound, he suddenly finds a lit stick of dynamite in his lap. And Harold tells him, Warden, are you going to complain or are you going to fish? So finding himself in this unexpected and potentially explosive situation, the warden, although he knew it was wrong, threw the dynamite into the water as well. And so that's what we want to talk about this morning, is explosive situations. Do we hear... let's see. I want to make sure I can make these slides work. There it is. All right. So I want to talk this morning about explosive situations. And we hear about this in the news very frequently, where we find that people get caught up in a situation that maybe they don't expect, or that they don't want to be in, and under the pressure of a dangerous time or place, or being in somewhere unexpected, they end up doing something that they normally wouldn't have done, or getting caught up in something that they wouldn't have done. And I think probably some of us have found ourselves in that place as well. And so I want to give this lesson to, number one, help us prepare for that, but also because I know for me there's a lot of things in here where I know I've failed in the past as well. So I want to look at two situations in the Bible that will help us, hopefully. There it comes. Sorry, we've got a little delay here. So that hopefully will help us prepare for dealing with explosive situations. The first is a very common one that we know. This is in Luke chapter 22. You can turn there with me if you like, starting in verse 54. This is when Jesus has been arrested by the Jews and brought to the house of the chief priest. And says, they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house. And Peter was following at a distance. And when they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat down among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him as he sat in the light and looking closely at him, said, this man was with them also. But he denied it, saying, woman, I don't know him. And a little later, someone else saw him and said, you're also one of them. But Peter said, man, I'm not. After the interval of about an hour still, another insisted, certainly this man was with him, for he's Galilean. But Peter said, man, I don't know what you're talking about. And immediately, while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. And Peter remembered the saying of the Lord, how he had said to him, before the rooster crows today, you will deny me three times. And he went out and wept bitterly. So here we have a situation where Peter finds himself under pressure in a difficult situation and is forced to make a decision. So why did Peter fail in this situation? And I think there's two things that I want to point out to you this morning that hopefully we can glean. The first is, sorry, there is a bit of a delay here. If you read that first verse again, the very end of it tells us that Peter followed at a distance. And I think the verse is probably indicating a geographic location, but I think it's also fair for us to look at this from a spiritual standpoint as well, because it's clear that Peter's distance from Christ, him following at a distance, and him not being with Christ is also an indication of his faith and the position that he was in and the fact that his faith was failing. Now, you may say, wait. Peter's faith is failing? Peter is like one of the big apostles. This is the guy who had the faith to say, I want to walk on the water when he saw Jesus, right? This is the same guy who not too long ago was told that, on this rock I will build my church. So Peter was, at times, a man of great faith, but Peter was also sort of the Babe Ruth of the Bible. Everybody knows that Babe Ruth, for a long time, held a record for most home runs in a season. What most people don't know is that he also held the strikeout record for many years in a season. And so, while you may think of great things from someone, there are also times where they can have great failures. And Peter was one of those. So listen, I don't doubt Peter's love for Christ. But when things started to look bad, Peter started looking out for himself. And he began to distance himself from Jesus. He had fled in the garden. He had certainly not come to the high priest's house now to stand by Jesus and to take judgment with him. So I think it's important that we know it's easy sometimes to follow Jesus when things are going well. When you're picking up loaves after a big feast and everybody's happy, there's some knowing looks and some, winks at each other. When you're walking behind Jesus, as he's riding into town with crowds waving, there's probably some high fives going on. It's very easy to be there and be with him in the good times. But at times where things are hard and we find ourselves alone and we're struggling, it can be very easy to distance ourselves. The writer of Psalms tells us that, for me, it is good to be near God. I have made the Lord my refuge, that I may tell of all your works. James tells us specifically regarding sin. In James chapter 4, verses 7 and 8. Submit yourselves to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. It's during those times where we are struggling, where we are under pressure, that our temptation is to distance ourselves sometimes from Jesus. But in reality, what we need to be doing is trying to draw closer to him. It kind of reminds me, there's a story I heard once about a man who lived his entire life, and when he died, he met Jesus and had the opportunity to look back on his life. And he saw his life as a footprints in the sand. And for most of his life, there were two sets of footprints. And he says, Jesus, I appreciate you being there for me this whole time. I can see how you walked with me most of my life. But there were a few times in his life where there was only one set of footprints. And as he thought about it, those were the hard times. And he asked Jesus, why is it that in the hard times you left me? And Jesus told him, I didn't leave you, son. It was those times that I was carrying you. So it's important for us to know that drawing closer to Jesus in the times of struggle are the way that we will get through those. So not only did he distance himself from Jesus, but there was another thing that amazed me about this. If you think about it, it was only a few hours before that Peter was extremely zealous in defending Jesus. When we read about the story in the garden, it was Peter who had gone and cut off Malchus's ear trying to defend Jesus. Now, I took a fencing class at A&M as a PE, and I can tell you there are no points for hitting someone in the ear. Okay? So the only way that this happened was one of two things. Number one is he was trying to split the guy's skull and just missed off the helmet and took his ear, or he's trying to stab the guy in the face. Either one of those tell us that this was not someone who was shy. This is not someone who was worried. He was very bold in his action. And yet, all of a sudden now, he's at a distance. And I think the one thing that we can probably assume from this is that he had also distanced himself from like-minded believers. He didn't have the group of apostles and disciples around him to support him and to be there to give him confidence and courage in what he was doing. And the same holds true of us. If we find ourselves distanced not only from Christ, but also from other Christians, people who share our beliefs, we too can fall victim to failure in these situations. The writer in Proverbs chapter 27, verse 17 tells us that iron sharpens iron and one man sharpens another. Paul in 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verse 11 says, "Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up, just as you have been doing." And finally, again in Proverbs, the writer tells us, "Whoever walks with the wise becomes wise, but the companion of fools will suffer harm." There's a very good reason that in the Old Testament, the Israelites were commanded to go to the temple on an annual basis. And it was to remind them and to bring them back closer to God. There's a reason why we are told to come and assemble together and to take communion. And it is to keep us close to God, to remind us of that relationship, to narrow that distance between Jesus and ourselves. And there's a reason we're not supposed to forsake the assembly, and that is because we want to create as little distance as we can between us and like-minded individuals. So, as Dwight Schrute may ask, question: do we sometimes distance ourselves from God? And what does that mean? What does it mean to distance ourselves from God? How do we draw closer? Well, do we talk to him on a daily basis? Luke chapter 22, verse 46, and he says to them, "Why are you sleeping?" This is again right before the garden when they're out at the on the mount. "Rise and pray that you may not enter into temptation." Jesus told his disciples, he knew what was about to happen. He knew that this explosive situation was coming, and the advice that he gave them at the time was to pray, to focus their minds, to draw closer. Do we do this on a regular basis? Do we draw close to God by speaking to him? Do we read his instruction daily? We have a group text. I don't know if everybody's in it. I will freely admit that I don't always keep up with the reading, but I do read the group chat, and it has been helpful to me. But we all know the verse in 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 16. "All scripture is breathed out by God, is profitable for teaching, reproof, correction, and training in righteousness, that the man of God may be complete, equipped for every work." We want to be equipped to deal with these situations that may come up in our lives that could be potentially explosive. And if we've been in his word, if we've been drawing close with our daily reading, then truly we'll be prepared. When we go through our lives and we plan, are we considering God's plan in our daily contemplations? In terms of each other, do we sometimes distance ourselves from each other? Do we spend time with people from our Christian family outside of the worship? Or do we have sort of our church friends that we see at church times and then our other friends that we hang out otherwise with? Are the people that we hang out with people that are going to strengthen us and give us strength, that will help us make good decisions or be resolved in the face of temptation? Or are they the kind of people that might lead us into temptation? Who do we choose as our roommate? Who do we choose to be our boyfriend, our girlfriend? Who do we choose to be as our spouse? Writer in Proverbs tells us that the righteous choose friends carefully, and by the way of the wicked, they are led astray. So, distance from each other, distance from God. One important factor that I think led to Peter's failure. Another important factor, I think, was that he put himself in danger. Purposely put himself in danger. Again, why did he do this? It wasn't to stand by Jesus. It wasn't to be there to defend him. But really, it was his own curiosity. He just wanted to. It was something that he wanted to do. If we look back at that, in Matthew's version, If we look back in Matthew's version, Matthew 26:58, what it tells us is that Peter had gone to the fire because he wanted to see the end. He thought this was over. It was a good run. They had 3 years together. They had some really good times. He had learned a lot, but he just wanted to see the end. I love the detail that John gives us in his account of this story, starting in chapter 18, starting in verse 15. It says, Simon Peter followed Jesus and did so, and so did another disciple. Since that disciple was known to the high priest, he was able to enter with Jesus into the courtyard. But Peter stood outside the door, and this other disciple who was known to the high priest went out, spoke with the servant girl who kept watch at the door, and then brought Peter in. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, You also are not one of his disciples, are you? And he said, I am not. Now the servants and the officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold, and they were standing and warming themselves. Peter was also with them, standing and warming himself. So what we hear here is that Peter didn't just kind of ease in with the crowd. He had to finagle his way in. He had to lie just to get into the courtyard because he wanted to see what was going on. And so it makes me wonder sometimes about us, and do we sometimes finagle our way into situations that maybe we shouldn't just because we're curious or because we want to? Do we sometimes lie or deny our faith to go someplace that maybe we shouldn't be in the first place? The other thing, now Simon Peter was standing and warming himself, so they said to him, You also are not one of his disciples, are you? And he denied it, said, I am not. One of the servants of the high priest, a relative of the man whose ear he had cut off, said, Didn't I see you in the garden with him? But Peter again denied it, and at once the rooster crowed. So here he is, he's finagled his way into some place that he probably shouldn't be in the first place. He had to lie to get in there. And inadvertently, not knowing who he was hanging around with, had put himself in the company of someone who had really good reason to kill him. He had just tried to kill this person's family member. And if they had found out who he was, likely would have done the same. I don't know if you've ever had the experience of suddenly coming to an awareness that you are in a place that you should not be and that you are in danger. I have. It's been an interesting story. This is a physical danger story. And it can be very, very frightening. And I think that sometimes if we recognized the danger, if we had our eyes open, we probably wouldn't do that. So, question. Do we sometimes allow our curiosity or our desire to put ourselves in a place that we should not be? Have you ever had to deny your faith again or lie to yourself or to someone else to justify going somewhere or participating in something that maybe you shouldn't have? Sometimes that may be going someplace with someone of the opposite gender that can put you in a dangerous situation that maybe you shouldn't be in. Maybe it's a place or a social event where people are doing things that are probably not the kinds of things that we would want to participate in. Luke tells us in chapter 2, verse 22, flee youthful passions, pursue righteousness, faith, love, and peace, along with those who call on the Lord and have a pure heart. So those are the things that we should be focused on, not getting into dangerous situations. Do we sometimes affiliate with people unknowingly or even knowingly who might lead us away from Christ? Paul tells the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for partnership has what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness, or what fellowship has light and darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial, or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? Now, he's speaking specifically about partnerships and being unequally yoked, putting yourself in a position where you don't have the power in the relationship. But much more succinctly and probably applicable to all situations is his note to the 1 Corinthians that just simply says, bad company corrupts good morals. So, distancing himself from God, purposely putting himself in a bad situation, I think are two things that led Peter to have a failure in his explosive situation. But I want to look at a second scenario now where the character may be performed a little bit better, and hopefully we can draw some positive clues from this situation, if the slide will catch up. Otherwise, I'm going to have to turn around and read because I don't have it on my deck. So this is the story of Joseph in Genesis chapter 39. And after a time, his master's wife cast her eyes on Joseph. This is after he's been sold into slavery by his brothers. He's gone to Egypt. He's now finds himself in the service of Potiphar. And he has been recognized as a shrewd manager and has been promoted to manager of the house and has all things in Potiphar's house under his purview. But after a time, his master's wife cast her eye on Joseph and said, "Lie with me." But he refused and said to his master's wife, "Behold, because of me, my master has no concern about anything in his house, and he has put everything that he has in my charge. He is not greater in this house than I am, nor has he kept back anything from me except for you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" And as she spoke to Joseph day after day, he would not listen to her, to lie beside her, or even to be with her. But one day when he went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house were there in the house, she caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and got out of the house. And as soon as she saw that he had left the garment in her hand and had fled from the house, she called the men of the household and said to them, "See, he has brought among us a Hebrew to laugh at us. He came in to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And as soon as he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, he left his garment beside me and fled and got out of here." Then she laid up his garment by her until his master came. And she told him the same story, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you have brought amongst us came to me to laugh at me. But as soon as I lifted up my voice and cried, he left his garment beside me and fled out of the house." As soon as his master heard the words that his wife had spoken, "This is the way your servant treated me," his anger was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. And there he was in prison. Now, some may say, wait a minute. Winding up in jail is not necessarily, doesn't sound like a successful outcome to an explosive situation. But I think in this case, we will find that that is the case. So what did Joseph do? What was his approach? What was different about him that led to his success here? The first thing that I would suggest to you is that Joseph had strong faith in God and was prepared and determined to serve him above all other things. Remember, Joseph had had a difficult life to this point, and it wasn't going to get much easier in the immediate future. He had been favored by his father, was treated with much jealousy by his brothers, was sold into slavery, took a trip to Egypt, was sold to someone, was a servant where he had served for several years before eventually arriving to this good place. But he always served God, and God was with him. God is the one that rescued him. We learned in James earlier that if we draw near to God, God draws near to us. And it's apparent that that has been the case for Joseph. Even Stephen, in his sermon right before he's stoned in Acts chapter 7, said that God was with Joseph and rescued him out of his afflictions and gave him favor. And in response to this favor, Joseph had fully placed his trust and faith in God. He had predetermined in his mind that he would not violate God's law. He even says this as part of the story. "How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" He clearly identified that this was wrong and it was not something that he could do. Because he was strong in the faith, he was fully prepared for this explosive situation. If you knew you were going to be in a literally explosive situation, you would probably prepare as well. This is what you would probably look like. You would have the Mylar face shield of salvation, maybe, or the Kevlar vest of righteousness. But being strong in a relationship with God also means that we're prepared. And that was the verse that Ryan read for us this morning. In Ephesians, Paul tells us, "Being strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against authorities, the cosmic powers over this present darkness, and against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm." The armor of God is one of the things that helps protect us when we are in an explosive situation. The other thing I would note about Joseph was that when he recognized a potentially explosive situation, He purposely tried to avoid it. The verse tells us that he would not listen to her, even though he was faced with this. Hey, Joseph, why don't you go? Not listening. Why don't you at least come in here and sit by me? Nope, hard pass, not going to do that. Right? He was purposely avoiding any times where she was trying to get him in because he knew that even proximity might lead to something else, in stark contrast to the way that Peter behaved. The other thing I noted is that he didn't look for a compromise solution. He didn't say, well, maybe if I give her a little of attention, maybe if I do something with her, but maybe not everything, maybe that'll keep her happy, and, you know, I won't have to deal with, you know, her being unhappy and coming after me all the time. So maybe I can appease her in some way and yet still not fully capitulate and maintain my relationship with God as well. But that's not something that he tried to do. So, question. Do we have a strong relationship with God? Does our relationship mean that we're prepared and that we recognize, like Joseph, that everything that happens to us has a plan? And do we diligently prepare ourselves for battle with sin? Do we prepare ourselves for these potentially explosive situations? The other thing is, do we put God's will and serving him above our own earthly desires? Do we sometimes compromise what God wants from us to meet the expectations of others so that we don't have to be fully disappointed to our earthly friends? I think it's important to note, second, after being prepared, that he had prioritized following God over the earthly consequences. So again, if you think about it, when this happens, he leaves his garment there. Now, it's not clear. I don't know if it's just, you know, sort of an overcoat. Did he run out in his underwear? Did he have nothing on? I don't know, but he clearly wasn't fully clothed. And so the idea of running out of the house in front of all the other servants, not fully clothed, could be, if nothing else, potentially embarrassing, but also something that's going to have to require some explanation. And in some ways, that could be it could make him look very guilty at worst, and very embarrassed, like I said, at best. But he didn't really care what people thought. He didn't care about the situation that he was going to be put in terms of his personal embarrassment. He was more worried about escaping the situation where he might find himself sinning against God. The other thing I would note is he didn't go back. Once he found out that she was going to make this accusation of assault against him to the master. He heard it, the servants knew, and then there was some time before the master came back. He could have gone back and said, wait, it was all a misunderstanding, you know, don't tell the boss what happened. Let's try to find a way to work this out. No, instead, he was willing to take the full consequences, even though it was a false allegation, rather than to give away what was right and to give in on what was right. So again, questions about this situation. Are we sometimes faced with times where we have to choose God over the world, where being cool or being socially acceptable is not something that we can be if we're going to be truly following God and making the decisions that he would have us to make? Are we worried about being embarrassed? James, again, in chapter 4, verse 4, tells us, "You adulterous people, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God." There is no way that we can always serve God and yet maintain friendship and popularity and coolness with people of this world that don't share our beliefs. Are we sometimes afraid to tell our friends that the activities that we can't participate in because of our faith? Or do we sometimes just find other excuses? I'm busy that day, I can't do it. Do we sort of hide our faith? Are we afraid to let people know what we believe and why we believe it? In Matthew chapter 10, Jesus tells us, "Don't fear those that can kill the body but can't kill the soul. Rather, fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell." God is the one that we're going to be accountable to, but he's the one that we should be serving, not the people of this earth. And then finally, in today's cancel culture, are we too afraid to speak God's truth? Are we afraid to defend God's plan for marriage, that a man and a woman should be married and have a family? Are we afraid to say that you're born a man or you're born a woman, and that you can't change that, and that there is a binary choice there? We're faced with a time where if we speak God's truth, we can be labeled a homophobe or a bigot or a transphobe. But in reality, Jesus tells us, blessed are you, this is Luke chapter 6, blessed are you when people hate you and when they exclude you and when they revile you and spurn your name as evil on account of the Son of Man. So we shouldn't be afraid of people on this earth. We shouldn't be embarrassed of how we might look in our service to God. So we've seen one good example. We've seen one bad example. Hopefully we've got a few takeaways, and I want to remind you of those. So what have we learned, hopefully? Number one, to put your faith in God fully and be prepared, like Joseph, and determined to serve him always. Don't be like Peter. Follow at a distance. Stay close to God and stay close to those like-minded followers. Finally, don't be like Peter. Avoid, first of all, identify, and then avoid putting ourselves, we should avoid putting ourselves in potentially dangerous situations. And then finally, don't be afraid of the earthly consequences of following God. We have a reward in heaven that's eternal. And the embarrassment and the things that could happen to us here on this earth are very short-lived. And finally, if there's any other encouragement, which I take too, is that even the great apostle, the Babe Ruth of the Bible, failed in an explosive situation. So if you're like me and you've done the same, just know that there is always redemption. Jesus offers us that redemption. He offers us the opportunity to be reconciled back to him. If you have failed, if you have failed in some of these explosive situations in the past and you need to draw closer to God, there is an opportunity this morning for you to do that, to come forward, to write your life, to draw closer to him, to ask for the support of like-minded people like us. If you have never started your relationship with Jesus and you want to be able to avoid these explosive situations, you want to be better prepared, there's no better time than now to come forward, put on Christ in baptism, and start your walk with him. If any of those are your need, we ask you to come forward and be recognized now as we stand.